Welcome to This Is Your Afterlife. I'm Dave Marr. I'm a comedian who survived a coma, and this is the podcast where I talk to people about death and art and politics and at least one event that defined their lives. And before I bring on my guest, I just want to say, and before you even hear the podcast, if this is your first time, I'm taking a risk and I'm saying you can support the show additionally on Patreon. I don't run ads, so Patreon is the only way to financially support the show. You get the premium feed with the bonus episodes on the off weeks for $5 a month. For $15 a month, you become a producer, and I shout you out. And those people are Katie Llewellyn, Fred Fidawa, Shubha Singh, G. Debo, and Doc Lobster, MD. And this is the first in a long time, maybe ever, because it's been a while, two-episode week of the podcast. I'm doing a couple of these, but Danny Catlow is my guest. Say hi, Danny.
Hello.
And you're the other half of Placegoers. I talked to Kate earlier this week.
You're doing us in the same week.
Huh? I'm doing you in the same week. And I appreciate you being willing to freaking pry yourselves away from each other for one damn second, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard.
But yeah, you do the, you, how do you, I asked Kate this, LA, you obviously introduce yourself to people a lot. You're thinking about how you're introducing yourself to people a lot.
Yeah, what how do to you package tell yourself, man.
Yeah,
we call
yeah,
it
yeah.
packaging out here.
Okay, how do you package yourself to people?
As far as Placegoers or just in general?
Just in general, so someone meets you. Someone Dude, you don't know question. If they're in the industry or not. Thank you.
Great question. This is like a hell for me because I hate every yep. answer to this question.
Sure.
If I'm around other actors, comedians, I will say I'm in the biz.
For real. Keep
it for real, bro. Keep it short.
But you'll say I'm in the biz?
Yeah.
That's cool, dude.
It's completely simple because
but you realize how like I mean I'm living in Cleveland, dude. To say the biz, like that's like that's already a level of something. Like, you know what I mean?
If I'm somewhere with other like if it's like a biz thing, I will usually be like, "Hey, I'm so and so's friend Danny." Because usually it's not a thing for something I've done. So I'll say, I'm Danny. Yeah, I'm also in the biz. Yeah. Cool. This is great. Oh, the lovely cocktails here. You know, whatever.
Sure.
But if I'm not at an event like that, I will tell people I'm an actor. And recently, instead of saying I'm an actor comedian, I've been saying, yeah, I'm an actor and I have a YouTube channel. Because I'm like fucking gung-ho about promoting that.
And you're fine with, because this is what Kate talked about, is like being completely fine, having like no shame because of how much she, and I know both of you, enjoy YouTube. There's not like, I wish I could say podcaster without some cringe. There's something about the word that it's feels horrible. Weird to me, even though it's horrible. Like most of what I do, and I love podcasts, and I love doing this.
Well, I think... Maybe there's a parallel here. To me, I have friends text me and say, "Oh, we went to the sandwich place you went to. You guys really are influencers." And I'm like, no. Don't ever use that. So maybe influencer and podcaster, I feel more comfortable saying YouTube and YouTuber. And maybe you could feel more comfortable saying I'm a host. I'm an interviewer.
Yeah. But that sounds weird. I don't know.
I'm a male host. I'm a male audio host.
Yeah, that's good. That's about time that men start like having to distinguish themselves. We make hostess the like standard word, and you have to say male host.
Yeah, I'm a male host. Well, I'm you a have male a it's comedian. A radio show.
It's not a radio show. It's a.
But know, what is pod? That's what it's based on. The whole podcast thing.
Yeah, I mean. We don't have to get into this. This is, but I think, okay, but you, is it true that you too are shameless? And I mean that in a good way about claiming the identity of YouTuber.
For sure. I think YouTube is the only one left for me as far as like what I actually enjoy on the internet. Obviously there's a lot of utility about the internet that I enjoy, but entertainment wise in social media, YouTube is the only one. I mean, I get like lost in Instagram. I'll get lost on the other stuff, but YouTube sure. to me, there's artistry, there's exploration. I learn on YouTube. I kind of get the most parasocial stuff on YouTube, which I think Kate and I are definitely gunning for with our channel. You know,
you're gunning for parasociality.
Come into our relationship. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Sure.
Come bear witness to the almighty love.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure where to, to do with that. Exactly.
I think it was one of our goals, like early on was like, do we want people to see the real us or not? And it was like, oh, I think people, ever since we became a couple, I think people have like almost been like fans of our relationship. And so it was like an easy thing to decide where it's like, okay, yeah, we can show the real us.
And that is really, you're pointing to a thing that I don't even think about sometimes, which is like that there's even an option to like not show the real me, which I don't mean in a like, oh, I'm so authentic. Like it has done me harm as much as it has like benefited, probably more than it has benefited me to be that sure. way. But I genuinely forget that other people like make that calculation.
Yeah. We never want to show our apartment on our YouTube channel. We never want to show, like there's some private stuff that we won't talk about or like we've talked about when filming, and I will leave it out of the edit where I'm like, I don't want to, like, I'll be like, hey, this is a thing my dad loves. That's fine. But like, if we're talking about our families, it's like feels icky.
Yeah.
Totally. But there's other people on YouTube who they go that vulnerable, and it is fascinating to see these vlogs that go into the life. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, but there's risk. I do understand, and I do set boundaries around in terms of like what to share, but in terms of like some level of familiarity, I'm always like, zone, in that pocket. But I guess what I'm thinking about is like how I would tell someone about you in terms of like the, obviously I would talk about place goers because I guess I'll not assume that Kate told you everything that I said, but it's part of me and my partner's like weekly routine is we like settle up all our like money and chores and meals for the week plans. And then we like check that there's a new place goers on Sunday. So I really like it.
Well, I've got bad news for you, man.
Okay.
We're moving the day.
I know. Kate said this, and I've got bad news for you.
You can't. We can't.
You can't do that, dude. You need
guys need to move your relationship admin day to Tuesday.
No way. Sunday is the you're doing it Tuesday? This comes out on Tuesday. People aren't going to have time to listen to This Is Your Afterlife and watch Placegoers on this.
We're
going to
divide
day.
The audience, man.
Oh my God.
We're going to fuck up your listenership.
But no, it's fine. But I'm thinking in terms of like credits. The thing I would say is like, oh, you're on the Joe Pera show. You're
Joe
in
Pera,
Connor's
the bear.
Videos recently. The bear. You got the bear too. Okay.
Got the bear. I think my biggest one on IMDb is Fargo. But I was a part of the COVID Fargo season, and they cut 80% of my scene. So, oh, wow. But that was kind of the coolest thing. That was like the biggest realist thing I've been in.
Was that the Chris Rock season?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean people might know me from hosting you on my couch. Do you remember this?
I do remember this, but why would they know you from that?
No, I don't know. I think people call me an improviser before they call me a comic. And I think people call me a I like to say comedian, when I talk about the comedy world.
Totally.
I think comic is a nasty word.
Why?
I don't know. It's like, it comes with that like stand-up pretension that I don't fuck with, but I think you, I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You think I fuck with that pretension
you became a comic. I feel like you went from an improviser and then you became a comic. I don't know how you feel. How do you, I guess what I should say is, how do you feel about the word comic?
I think comic has a, to me, the first thing I think of when I think of comic is graphic novel artistry. Mm-hmm. I do think it's exclusively a reference to stand-ups rather than improvisers. And I think to me, what you're calling pretension, I would call possibly a performance of like working class sort of like, oh, I'm hitting the road, I'm a comic, you know, which is definitely a type of pretension, but it's a like performance of like machismo and work ethic and that kind of thing.
And I'm like, y'all,
No, go ahead.
I'm like, it's being funny. Why are you making this funniness so serious with this serious word comic?
I don't think it's that serious though. I think it's fine if you say it like if you don't put a lot of stink on it, you know?
Yeah. Comedian is just so fun to me. Comedian.
But it is funny because when I think of you, I do think of when we first met and doing that improv festival in Austin.
Computer, right?
On the couch. Computer was the improv group.
Yeah.
And because I still think of you as like it's probably a little condescending and I don't mean it to be, but I still think of you as like a little boy, you know?
For sure. I think I still think of me as a little boy.
Yeah, sure.
I think there's still people that meet that see me in LA, Chicago people, and go, "Hey Max, how's it going?"
No.
I'm like, this is fucking crazy. There's like, Max and I host this big weekly bike ride in Los Angeles, and there are people who have met me and Max, and Max and I don't perform together anymore at all.
Right.
We're still
this
very
is your
good friends.
Friend who you moved to Chicago with, started improv with around the same
time. Right. Max and I moved to Chicago in 2013 with a sketch show. And everyone in Chicago knew us as a pair. It was like those Austin boys came to town and did the festival that only a group of 20 best friends were doing. You know, it was like we were these weird outsiders in this. We broke into this like circle of friends very quickly. And everyone knew us as like these little Texas boys, Max and Danny. And meeting people now, Max and I run this thing together. We don't perform together anymore. No more comedy together. But we do this bike ride where we host and lead a 10-mile ride every Wednesday. And meeting people now, people still get us confused. I have glasses. I have long hair. Max has no glasses. And people come up to me and go, "Hey, Max, how's the kid?" Max has a beautiful newborn son.
Oh, my God.
And people come up to me and go, "Max, how's the boy?" And I'm like, "I'm Danny." And I'm like,
"I got a YouTube channel."
I actually have a YouTube channel, man. We're almost to 500 subs, man. Please. Help us out. Trying to monetize, please.
That is so – I mean, I guess it's part of the like male host thing. You know, it's about time white guys had it the way that everyone else has had
it. Oh, for sure.
We're just like easily confused with everyone.
They also – if they don't – they don't believe that we're not the same person, and when – they find out we're not, they'll be like, "Oh, you guys have to be related." And I'm like, "Nope, we're pretty different looking."
Yeah, definitely.
There's a spirit thing, I guess.
I don't want to say which, but one of you is like devastatingly handsome and the other is kind of a dog. You know what I mean?
Dude, you want to know a fucked up memory I have about me and Max?
What?
There was a night we were at the Annoyance Theater and McNapier came up and did a Twisted Mind game on us.
Okay.
and he came up and he went, he's wasted. Me and Max are probably a little drunk. He comes up to us and he goes, if it's not the inseparable fuck brothers, you know, whatever he does. And then he goes, "Which one of you is funnier? on the count of three, say who's funnier. And I went like into this fucking crazy matrix in that moment where I was like, I'm talking to Mick Napier. The annoyance is all about like self-expression. It's all about the self.
Oh no.
And I was like, Max and I are going to both say ourselves to try and impress Mick and make him.
No.
And I was like, I know exactly. And he goes, 1, 2, 3. And I went, me. And Max went, I'm not answering that. And then I looked at Max and Max looked at me and was like, and I was like, no.
I love like, that Max waited for three though to say I'm not answering that. He's still, that's Max a little bit making you wait, you know?
For sure. And I think and then I remember like walking down the hall with Max and I was kinda like, dude, I'm sorry, I thought we were both gonna say ourselves. He's like, it's all good, like it's fine. But definitely a hurtful moment for a friendship to be like,
yeah.
And we're like 22 and so vulnerable trying to like figure out Chicago.
Yeah. What was my impression of that weekend was you as boy. And I think that was the highest I've ever been in my life.
When I met you in Austin.
Yeah.
So I lived in Austin. Dave came to town to do an improv festival.
Uh-huh.
What was it called?
Out of Bounds.
With this epic Chicago group, Computer. Everybody was so excited to see Computer. One of the talks of the fest.
For real?
And for real. I think.
Wow.
Not any offense to you, but anybody coming from Chicago was like, oh, dude, Chicago team.
Yeah. Of course.
Much more than like an LA or New York team. Because Austin's improv scene at that time was so like, improv is the answer. Long form improv will save us all.
It was like. Right.
It wasn't about sketches or can you hear Kate's mixer in the background?
I don't think so.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I can hear it right in this ear.
It's like a vegetable, like a kitchen mixer?
She's baking right now.
Okay.
Dave's staying on my couch. I'm fucking 19.
Yeah. I mean, how old are you now? I'm 41.
34. You're 25. I'm 19. That's a big gap.
You're only 34.
Mm-hmm. I just looked at the time to check my age. Well, I did fuck up my age last year.
You went younger or older?
I thought I was older. So when I got to my birthday in 2025, I told my dad on the phone was like, how old are you turning? I was like, dude, I'm 35. He was like, that's crazy. And he goes, wait, you're 34. And for the whole time I was 33, I was saying I was 34.
Wow.
So now you
robbed yourself of some youth, dude.
I kind of did. I felt weird. I was like, what the hell? Then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm 34 again.
20.
I was 19. You're 25.
19. Yeah.
26. Yeah. 19. Yeah. And I just remember I didn't really fuck with weed, but you guys were like so excited that one of my roommates had weed.
Well, he had so much too. It was like the most I've ever seen, dude. It was like
he loved weed. Shout out, Sam.
I was at the airport leaving the festival. My soul was like not in my body. I was just like, and I wasn't high still. I was just like used up from smoking weed. The amount of, I mean, even like. You know, I'm the only one who doesn't do any of that stuff as a rule anymore. So I think there's a reason that I was like, you know, even Drennan, who, isn't a sober guy, I will say at that time, partook, yeah. You know, was I think looking at me a little like scared, maybe.
Who all was Computer? You, Drennan, Strauss?
Daniel Strauss. And Ross Kimball, but Ross was replaced by Bill Stern. That
utility player. You can throw him on any fucking team; he'll knock it out of the park.
But also, he was like a darling of Austin, you know. So I feel like we had people who were just fans of Bill,
right?
That came to see our show.
I thought you were about to say, but also he said something bad in our show. Great player. But he did. Use some slurs.
So is there something about me from that time that I need to know that Or was no, it just the Chicago of everything?
I think it was – everyone was so excited. I mean, I was just obsessed with Chicago improv and Chicago comedians. And at the time, I was living with John Brewster. Or no. It was before John Brewster moved to town. Do you know who that is?
No.
Fascinating. Do you remember Eric Rutherford?
Yes.
So I ended up living with those guys in Austin, and I was like, what do I do in Chicago? And they were kind of like, just go out every night and fucking do shows every single, do as much. And I was like, yes, sir. And I remember before I moved in with them, when I was living at that big house that you guys crashed at,
yeah,
we were like Chicago dudes. The festival reached out to us and they were like, I think one of the other roommates, there were two Sams, me and Addison, and one of the Sams was on the board of the festival. And he was like, there's some Chicago guys that need housing. Would you guys be down? We were all like, yes, dude, fucking legends. And I remember walking into Sam's room and seeing you so fucking high. And I got scared. I got like little boy scared, where like, I think you were kind of like scared. And I was like, uh-oh. It was like a super bad scene.
Scared of what though? Scared that I was like going to die, or scared that I was like going to judge you or something?
I think scared that I wasn't like, because I think it was you and Drennan both really high and laughing in a room. And I was like, oh no, I can't get high with them. Like, I'm not going to connect with the Chicago guys in my house. You know, I was like worried about my impression on you. And you guys were like, we're sleeping in a teenager's house right now.
Yeah, we left. You guys had a party one night and we like left and stayed at a hotel the last night.
Yeah. It was like the closing party of the festival was at our house.
Yeah. And we were like trying to sleep on the couch at like 4 a.m. and it was like still going. And it's like, what is it, you forget when you're older, like what the difference between 26 and 19 is. But it's like, yeah, it is
a massive
difference.
It's fucking massive. What's funny is the other guy, Danny Addison. Addison was fucking 18 when you guys were there.
Wow.
And if you have met an 18-year-old recently, they seem like they're 12 years old.
Yeah. So imagining that. Forget all this, like, you know, reminiscing about improv stuff. I'm very excited to talk, and part of me does just want to like putz around and do nothing this whole time. But
steer the ship, Dave. Tell me what to talk about.
We have some business to get to, Dave.
Please.
First thing I need to ask you, and the other stuff can come in if it comes in. But the first thing I need to ask you is, what do you hope happens when you die?
Now, I don't know if your listenership knows this, but you send this question out in an email.
Yes, people have been commenting on the emails recently, so I think people are aware. What people might not know is the emails are like newer.
Okay.
So I'm trying to be a little bit more.
I think it's good. Yeah. My short answer is I think it's some kind of party. It's some kind of party.
Okay.
Wait, you said hope. Or what do you think happens?
Yeah. This is the confusion.
Yeah, I hope it's a party. I hope it's a party.
Okay.
I hope it's a big, I mean, what drugs did you do when you did drugs? Did you do all drugs?
I mostly just smoked weed and drank. But it was like, if something was there, I was open to it. The main thing one time, you remember that L&L tavern in Chicago that was like famously like the John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer bar, supposedly.
Killer bar.
Yeah. They hung out. I know Dahmer's not from Chicago. I think when he was like in town. Anyway, I have no idea if it's even true. Anyway, we are sitting at the L&L tavern after some improv show, me and some friends, and like there was some like experience marketing happening with some like women, such a weird dive bar for this to like be happening in. But there were some like, you know, women in like tight outfits who were like marketing some drink, and it came with a little like powder, and they like held it out and I snorted it before taking the shot. and then realized that you were supposed to lick it.
Oh my God.
So it was just like salt or sugar or something. But that was the level of like not even
asking. You're just like, asking. You're kind of fucked up and you're just like, uh-huh.
I'm just like, yeah, yeah. Or even not fucked up. It was just like something's being offered. I'll take
that. I want to feel different. Well, I think I love Molly. I love ecstasy.
Okay.
Responsibly. And I truly, there's been times when I've been rolling on ecstasy and I've been like, this has to be what it's like to not suffer being alive. And I think there's, you know, I don't know. I'd be curious. I've always wanted to try DMT. I haven't done that. But, you know, I think there's some, when we're not in like an earthly reality anymore, I think it's going to feel light and joyous. And, but yeah, I think there's feelings. I think there's existence. There's some spiritual beyond for sure.
For sure. That's confident.
For sure. Yeah. You could sway me into being like a cynic about it all, but I'm not interested in that right now. Please.
Oh, no, no problem. Yes, sir. What makes you confident, even as confident as you are in that?
Because I think, I don't know, like we don't know. And if you don't know about something, then it's whatever you decide it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is sort of a child logic where it's like, if I don't know, well, I guess that doesn't make sense. If I don't know about something, then I can decide my truth about it, and then I can live with that and not be curious. But the only answer to being curious about the afterlife is dying, right?
Yes, yes, actually, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I always think about drugs when I think about dying. And I always think about parties and, you know, I think it's like, you're going to see everyone you've ever loved that's gone also. Like, I kind of have to believe that or else I'm going to be sad.
Sure. Is there a, like, it sounds like the draw for you is human connection, but also like sensual pleasure, or also like the absence of certain negative emotions.
Yes.
You know what are those negative emotions?
Yeah. I never want to have to sleep again. I hope when I die and I go to sleep, I have major sleep anxiety. I never want to have to rest or sleep again. I hope heaven is just, I can fucking run forever.
What do you mean sleep anxiety? Like before you get anxious before you go to sleep or
like literally in 3 hours in LA, I'll get anxious because it's the end of the day. It's like 6 p.m. and the sun's going to start going down. And I'll be like, oh no, here comes the end of the day.
Isn't that weird? This feels like death anxiety to me, dude.
Well, for sure. I think for me, I'm always like, I didn't get enough done in my day. I didn't.
It's productivity related?
Productivity. Yeah. Did I make an impact? Did I matter? I guess that's death anxiety.
I think so. I don't mean to like, I'm just curious about it because I haven't heard, I mean, I could like guess what it means, but I don't think I've actually heard someone say like the phrase sleep anxiety before.
Yeah, I think that's Dr. Danny coming up with that.
I like it. I'm like, I'm here for it.
I think, yeah. Well, I had a very early experience with death. I lost my mom when I was 8.
Okay.
And so I think to me, and then immediately went into like crazy sleep issues. Could not go to sleep. Crazy sleep shit. Actually, I was fine sleeping. And then I did a sleepover at my friend's house where they watched It and Child's Play in the same night. And my brother was 14 and he was like fine watching that shit. And I was 10. And I was like, I was like, that's the scariest shit I've ever fucking seen in the entire world.
Yeah.
And also like seeing horror movies after you lose a parent is just like, is that what happened to my mom?
Oh no.
And so I think like sleep has been this like enemy of mine and rest in general. I'm like a busybody.
What, like how was your mom's death like framed to you as a kid?
I mean, I was like holding her hand when she died. So I think my dad was he was like, you have to experience this. My dad was a very spiritual person, and he's a very introspective and like therapeutic. He believes in therapy wholly. And so he did a very good job of like exposing me and my brother to the reality of the situation and then being like, let's go see some intense child therapists right now so that we didn't get fucked up.
But you did get fucked up.
Well, sure. You're going to get fucked up if a parent dies.
Yeah. Of course.
But
what did you get from those? Like, are there things that you took from those therapy experiences? By the way, whatever you want to share. I'm not like, I don't feel any need to like sit on your, you know, weakest nerve.
I love talking about myself. I think I did like play therapy, which I thought was really cool. But then it turned out that the play therapist was trying to fuck my dad and he ripped me out of play therapy and I was really sad.
Whoa.
And she took, do you know what play therapy is?
No, I can guess, but I don't want
to. There's different forms, but basically there was a sandbox on a table. Mm-hmm. And every week I would go and she'd be like, she'd have all these toys on the wall. And she'd be like, basically it's like a distraction for the kid to like talk about stuff. And she'd be like, make a scene of a house, you know? And I'd pull the fun toys that I wanted to put in the sandbox. And I'm like, I was like a little too old for it, but I thought it was so fun that there was just a room of toys. It was so special. And every week she would take, you'd go for an hour and then she would take a Polaroid picture of the sandbox at the end.
Mm.
And then she would write down notes about the different scenes I had made in the sand and what the different stuff was. And sometimes I'd do writing too. It was like it was an active therapy, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I sat there and talked, I'd get like fucking creeped out. Be like, no, I don't like feeling like this. She took these pictures. Like 6 months into it, I was like, this is the coolest therapy. My dad was like, we actually have to stop going to her. I'll explain later why he did when I was a teenager. But I was like, you have to get those photos. She said she'll give me the photos. And because my dad wouldn't fuck her, she wouldn't give him the Polaroid pictures.
Wow. Wait, what did he explain when you were a teenager? Was she doing stuff? Was she putting her number on the back of the Polaroids?
He like didn't date for a while. And then later on when he was dating and we sort of understood he was dating and like being with other women, then he was kind of like, so now you've seen me like with other people. That play therapist, he was like, I just feel like I need to tell you, she wanted to be with me and I couldn't be with her. That felt unhealthy. And I was like, all right.
That's so mature.
Yeah. He made a lot of good decisions and a lot of wacky ones as well.
Sure. Okay. So you were talking about the experience with your mom as it was happening.
For sure. And my mom worked in the hospital that she died in. So we were like very at home there. And I think it was like this sort of strange family affair where like when she was getting taken off life support, she was in this room full of like all of her coworkers and all of my family. And it was like it was kind of like a little party, but everyone was fucking weeping and losing their minds.
Right.
And I just remember being like, oh, this is everybody that loves her. Cool. This is good. This is a good thing. Like I have memories of like knowing we were doing it right, you know?
Yeah.
And like sort of, and my dad was very like open about everything. He was explaining everything the whole time it was happening. And I was just like, and you know, it took, as a kid, you're just like, okay, whatever you say. Like you could be telling me that the fucking tooth fairy's coming, I don't know, and I'll believe you, but
right.
Yeah, he did a really good job. And then I got the sleep shit. The sleep shit was like the biggest side effect for me of like just weird PTSD. Kids grieve so weirdly and You can't understand it. We just, when Kate's dad passed away, her niece and nephew were so interesting to watch. Cause I was like, I think her nephew was around 8. And I was like, I was keeping an eye on him. Cause I was like, how is he going to fucking deal with this weekend? We like watched him die. He wasn't in the room when that happened, but we went to the funeral and it was so funny to watch them. And I was like, oh man, this is like, yeah. He kept saying, he learned that people thought it was really sweet when he told us how much he was going to miss Papa.
Whoa.
And so he sort of like in the car, he was like, it's so sad that Papa is gone. And everybody was like, start crying or be like, yeah, you're right. His name's Danny as well.
Okay.
And, we'd be like, yeah, you're right, Danny. It's brutal, dude. And then he was like, oh, I can get a rise out of them. And then so him and Kate's niece, in very sweet ways, but they would like walk into the room and kind of be like, is it true that he's never coming back? And everybody would be like, yes, God. Yes. And I was like, I see what you guys are doing.
That is
you guys
so
are fucking
funny.
And it was like, you know, I think they wanted attention and they were getting it. And like, of course, you turn your like, I think you should turn your attention to kids in those times.
Not doing anything wrong. They're just doing something like interesting.
No. It was like this fascinating little feedback loop.
Did you feel like other people were noticing it, or did you kind of feel like you were trying to make eye contact with people and not having your gaze met?
I mean, I think I had a unique perspective being the boyfriend who had met the newly deceased only once before. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I was sort of the outsider, which was honestly a great, if you ever got to go to a funeral weekend with a family, I was like running to get meals. I was having so much. It was so nice to be like, hey, I'm not needing to drink red wine at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want me to drive the car, I'll run around and do whatever.
You get to be very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, also a thing my dad did was, this probably fucked me up more than it helped, but he showed me and my brother 6 feet under
the HBO show. Oh my God.
When, like, probably when I was like 11.
Oh my, dude, that show traumatized me when I saw it after college.
It's fucking intense.
It's so intense.
But it also was like this intense catharsis because my dad was like watching it and crying. And I was like, it's all about death and not knowing what to do. And it's so fucking good. Have you watched it since doing this podcast?
I should rewatch it.
I mean, it was a huge tool for my family to like learn about grief and understand death. And it's also so soap opera-y. Like,
yeah,
it's very, there's some episodes where you're like, Jesus, that's not real. What the fuck?
I just watched the episode where the people like, beat up Michael C. Hall.
Spoiler alert.
Well, no. I didn't say that much. I said, you're right. Yeah.
It's one of the, hardest to watch things ever recorded. And I don't think I was allowed to watch that episode.
Okay.
But Kate and I just did a rewatch. It's a very fun LA watch as well. After living here for a while, it's like, it's so fun to see your city like that. But I was remembering scenes from that episode and I was like, maybe I got kicked out of the room because I don't think my dad would have let me watch this part.
Right.
Can I spoil and say something weird?
Sure. I mean, people can know now.
Turn it off. Turn it off if you don't. Turn it off and then turn it back on in 30 seconds when he makes him suck the gun.
Yeah.
I was like, and he's like calling him Efsler and he's like making him suck a gun and he's like forcing a blowjob with the gun.
Right.
I don't think I watched that as a kid.
Yeah. True.
I hope I didn't watch that.
Right. Okay. So we're back. From
turn it back on.
Turn it back on.
They have to listen to hear that, to hear us call them back. That's funny.
Yeah, I figured that was maybe kind of like self-explanatory, but But so let me ask you that. Let's you know, you've already like in some ways answered the next question, which is what's your coma? Which do I need to explain the metaphorical nature of that question?
No.
Okay. Well, but I don't want to force you. It doesn't need to be your mom dying, but that's an example of, for instance, the before and after of like no sleep issues before this, sleep issues after. You know, they don't all have to be negative events or changes, but yeah.
How many? What's the podcast record for how many comas somebody's listed?
People, I usually try to keep them to one. So I think probably two.
I was
maybe
fucking
three.
Coming up with so fucking many.
How many did you come up with? Maybe that's what we do. Maybe you give us a blurb.
I'm gonna break
on
the fucking
one.
TIYA record here. Tia,
please.
Do you have a? Do you say Tia?
I don't. I have been abbreviating TIYA, and the bonus show I call TIYA After Dark. It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Tia.
But Tia doesn't really feel
tortilla. You need to add something, a pre-title.
A tortilla. Yeah.
The original.
The off
radio.
Record. What?
I don't know. I said
the original
radio.
You said. So listen, what's your? Man. Yeah. What are? What's
obviously
the, like, stuff that.
Okay. I think mom dying shaped my life.
Sure.
Obviously, transformative experience. But I think when you're 8 years old, I don't think it actually transforms you that much. I think it fucked me up in ways, and it set me up for this crazy family dynamic of like a motherless youth, basically.
Right.
But I think that experience, I think it was a lot harder on my brother and my dad, honestly.
Because it's like, is it that you weren't like congealed enough as a person yet?
No, I'm just a bouncy little ball, you know, I'm just like running around.
Yeah.
My brother was 12. My brother was like on the edge of puberty. My dad was in love with the woman and an adult.
Yeah.
So I think like, I think it shaped it. It like turned the path, but I don't know about coma. One I thought of that one negative one, I'll do one negative, one positive. One negative was this breakup after high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was handling it really poorly. And I went back to who ended up being, I went back to the therapist that was sort of my therapist throughout my childhood. And I would like dip back into therapy with her. And she became like this family friend. She was awesome. But I hadn't seen her since I was like maybe 15. And I was like 18 going through this crazy breakup. And I was like, I'm losing my mind. I can't handle this. And she was like, we basically reached a point in the therapy where she deemed it. She basically diagnosed me and she was like, you know what's happening right now, right? And I was like, what? And she was like, you're grieving your mom. This is like the first loss you've experienced since your mom. So you're doing work for that 8-year-old boy. And it, you know, I do think grief like is this snowball that goes your whole life. And like every time something is lost or someone is lost, it stacks. It's like a mole sauce, you know?
I don't know, but I can imagine that that's how a mole sauce is built. But
you're not a Mexican chef, man.
You had, I mean, I like them both, but those are, it was also a jarring metaphor to go from the snowball to the I feel like the snowball is accumulating, getting bigger. The mole sauce is like I imagine it's like reducing, like it's cooking down probably. Right?
I think mole is a better metaphor because it's getting more complex with time and with the different stages. I think snowball bigger. It's like ideally in your life you're processing and it's just getting different and different and different.
Does it feel?
Dude, clip that. That's good. Put that on the foot. Clip that.
Okay. Yeah, you love. You gotta love when someone says to clip it. That's that's how you know it's clippable. But I'm not sure if I, because I have become a little bit of a resource for people, or a someone that people will ask about like death and grief stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's certain aspects of it that I've experienced that almost no one else has, or that people haven't yet. But there are elements of it that I still haven't experienced yet. And I'm trying to think if that rings true for me. Because for me, the big deaths were a grandpa when I was young, a grandma.
I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Thank you. That's how we have to rack it up. Can I tell you, I take some, this is, here's like a, I'm trying to reveal like a fucked up thing here. I take some pride in not telling people that I'm sorry for their loss when they reveal stuff like your mom dying, because I think it makes me like more, I think it makes me better. I think it makes me like, you know, more like able to face reality, that I'm not like saying the thing they expect to hear when they tell you someone died. You know what I mean?
You and I are birds of a feather with that, because I
contrarians.
I also am just like, I think it's a read the room situation, but I fucking hate when I'm in the middle of telling someone about the experience, right, and they throw that in and it's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, yeah.
I figured.
That's where I guess the generous way of looking at this to myself is that I am trying to actually like be present for the story and the thing that someone's telling me, but I have to.
Well, if someone's like, "Hey, sorry, I couldn't come to dinner last night. Someone fucking died," then you can be like, "Oh my god, dude, it's so recent. I'm so sorry. That's intense. What do you need?" But when someone's telling you about like a childhood thing, it's like, "I'm so sorry." And I'm like, yep, what you're doing right now is you're feeling the sadness of a child losing their mom. I've dealt with that my whole life. Don't stop my fucking story.
Right.
Now I'm trying to fucking talk to you. Let me fucking talk.
Dude, there's few better feelings than being the person who went through the intense thing and having the upper hand of like when someone else feels like in the one man show I did about the coma, I would like talk about like intense medical things that happened. And there were moments when I could like clockwork, people would wince in the audience and I would be like, I'm so sorry that you have to like hear about that.
You know what I mean?
And it was like so satisfying just to like, it's such high status to be like, to know that. Yeah. To have people, they have no recourse, but to like,
I survived and I have the confidence to carry this story to you. Yeah, for sure. No, I feel like when I was in school, I like almost weaponized it. Not weaponized it. That's scary. But you know, it'd be like, my fucking mom is dead. What do you mean I have to do homework? Like, you know, like crazy shit. Yeah, I guess really to adults, more so with other kids, but I'd be like, you don't know what it's like, bro. Like life is so fucking hard.
Which is like, fucked up, because as with the other Danny, it's like you were actually saying a true thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But you just like, you're like, I feel like all kids are always sort of trying on different costumes and you're like flexing these, you know, muscles that you see adults very comfortable working, where it's like, oh yeah, I saw on a TV show, I saw in 6 Feet Under, this guy said that like life is fucking pain. So like, watch this. I'm going to say in math class, life is fucking pain. And like, there's going to be a goth girl that thinks that's awesome. You know, it's like insane.
I mean, that sounds very sane to me. If you have the like awesome line to the goth girl by quoting 6 Feet Under in math class, you fucking take that shot, you know?
And I took the shot and I dated her for 1 month. And then we broke up because I was afraid to kiss her.
That's sweet. I take it this is not the 18-year-old breakup.
No. So back to the breakup. Great job, Dave. That was awesome. You're a terrific male host.
Thank you so much.
I went through that breakup. So it was so intense. And I feel like through that breakup, I learned that I was kind of in control of my life. I moved out of my house when I was 17. I was really done living at home. And my whole plan was like, I wasn't going to college, but I moved next door to the college my girlfriend was going to.
Okay.
And I moved into an apartment that I met that of a, I was subletting from a German man who I met in an improv class.
Okay.
Cause I started improv when I was 17 and he was like, it's illegal to rent to you, but okay, go ahead. And I, and it was very strange. I lived in his apartment and the only rule was don't open the second bedroom door.
No.
And I lived in this fucking apartment and I never opened the door.
You like, never opened it?
Never. I think it was locked.
Okay.
But yeah, he was like, you can never go in there. That's my stuff. Don't go in there.
I was like, okay. Oh, okay. So it didn't, it you don't think it was like a skeleton or something like that?
Could have been. He rented an apartment to a 17-year-old. Very sure. bizarre situation.
Sure.
Anyways, moved into that apartment, was taking improv classes and working in an ice cream shop. And I rode my bike to work and I rode my bike to improv. And I lived next door to the college that my girlfriend went to. And she dumped me. And then I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like my whole plan was like this person. It was like my whole plan.
Right.
That went away. Then I was sort of like, wait, I'm a fucking badass. I go to improv class and I'm getting hella laughs in my improv class and I'm 17 and I ride my bicycle around Austin. I'm a cyclist and I have a job and all my other friends are going to college and college is fucking lame. And I just like learned, you said a funny word earlier. You said shameless. And I just had a conversation with my brother this week on the phone. He was like, you have always been one of the most shameless people. And I was like, I think it's where I learned to do that. I was like, well, never going to feel worse than this. Grieving my mom's death through a breakup that I thought would never happen. And like not really on the normal path of life. So yeah. I think I really transformed there.
This, well, man, there's just so many different directions I could go with this. But the mole thing is still like looming large in my mind. So the thing I want to ask about that is I had this whole preface about the thing, the types of grief and death that I have not experienced yet, including the death of parents or a sibling. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, but I've had breakups. Mm-hmm. I had the coma. I've had friends die, but I don't know if I've experienced.
I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Great. So I don't know if the way I've experienced it is what you're describing, where it carries echoes of all the other ones. Like, is what you're saying that like, even future griefs you had, you remember the girlfriend, you remember your mom.
Girlfriend doesn't really come into play.
Okay.
But Kate and I just lost our kitty cats.
Yes.
And I think when those guys went, and I lost a friend and roommate in Chicago. I've had all these like heavy, heavy, heavy deaths. And I think whenever I come that close to death, I'm like, when the veil is thin, like, I can see them all. I'm like, yep. Okay. You're all here. You're all on me with this. When our cat, when one of the cats died, who was it? I don't remember. One of the cats died and Griffin and his girlfriend Steph brought over Thai food and we were all chugging wine and eating Thai food and laughing and watching YouTube videos and just trying to do distraction shit. I started just talking about our friend James who had died and I was like, dude, we've got to like, and Griffin was like, yeah, I was thinking about James today too with this. And it's like, I think just when you get near physically when you're in a time near the transition of someone close to you, I think for me, it brings back, it's like, I get these echoes and these like, moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about it that has never really resonated for me is when people talk about it as like a wound and as like healing, like, you know, because you'll hear people talk about wanting closure or wanting something like resolved. And then you'll hear advice that seems a little wiser than that, which is like, you know, you never get over the person. Your heart just gets bigger and expands and encompasses like more love or whatever. And like, none of that really, like, at least right now, it doesn't like resonate that much with me, because it feels like things that just are there. And it's not like they're pressing on you. It's not like you are never getting over this thing. It just is a thing that exists for you to, it's more like a path that you're like circling by, and you're like seeing some of the same things again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are you a gamer at all?
I'm not, but go ahead. Say whatever you're going to say.
I feel like when deaths happen, like you bring people into this like secret party that you have, like an RPG party in your world. And it's like, all right, I got the kitty cats in my party now. Like you muscle on through life with them.
Oh, your party as in like your traveling party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think grieving is like the step of welcoming them into your party, and it never fucking stops. You know, that's like, that's the classic. I feel like that's a well-known fact about grief, is it's like closure. The closure is that they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The closure is that they're fucking dead. And so,
I mean, nothing has closure. I'm like still like reinterpreting my childhood in some ways.
Of course. You'll do that till you're dead too.
Right. Right.
Dude, you're still trying to get good at the Herald, man.
Hey, I was trying to get good at the Herald before I even knew about the Herald, while I was doing the Herald, and after, you know, it's like, what TJ and Dave would talk about, you know, their shows. It's like they're just showing you the slice of these people's lives that has existed before and will exist after. And that's how I felt every time I stepped on that stage at IO Chicago.
The Improv Olympic.
And made some of the best hashtag IO memories of my life, you know?
What did Daniel Schaar call the place? There was a tweet he made when he moved away. He was like, I'm having a goodbye party at the hallowed halls of Ha Ha. I think about that every time I think of IO, the hallowed halls of Ha Ha.
More like the freaking hollow halls of Ha. You know what I mean? Because
for sure, man. There, but, you know? But hey, also, you know what was there the whole time? Us.
Not the a bunch whole of time. Friends. Not if you got cut.
Well, not if you got cut.
You know,
you still came around.
Yeah, you could still come. That's true. That's true. Okay, so we really, you're really not doing well in terms of setting a record.
Oh, breakup learned how to be myself. There's, I was trying to think of like a moment where I fell in love with restaurants, because I fucking love restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really, I guess, good for the metaphor. Oh, yeah, it is. There's my single dad. My brother had moved out of the house. I think I was like 15. And I was like, came home from like a play practice or a play rehearsal or something. Do you hear this? Kate, it sounds like Kate is like building fucking IKEA furniture out there.
I'm hearing something now, but it's okay.
I'll go yell at her.
No, it's okay. It's one of those things where it's almost certainly going to be removed, and people are just like, wondering
this is
what
a waste
the fuck
of, yeah,
we're even talking like, about. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keep listening, guys. It's going to get really good.
No, it's gotten good. It's keep listening, guys, because you're already in. And wow, let's keep it going. Let's stay tuned,
guys. I'm about to tell a sweet story. My dad, I got home from some play rehearsal or something, and I was like, all right, what's for dinner? And I just clocked this look. Like, I cannot imagine being a parent. I can't imagine being a parent. I cannot imagine being a single parent.
Mm.
And I clocked this look on my dad's face where he was like, oh, fuck, I forgot dinner. I forgot to think about this. And it was like 8 o'clock. We lived in Dripping Springs, Texas, which is 35 minutes southwest of like downtown Austin.
Okay.
And my dad was like, it was maybe like 8:30 by the time he like had an answer for me. And he was like, okay, dude, put on your nicest shirt. And I was like, what? And he was like, put on your nicest shirt. We're going to a steakhouse and I'm going to teach you how to order steak. And I was like, awesome. And we went to a McCormick and Schmick's in downtown Austin.
Okay.
And I just remember thinking, I was like, my dad's the fucking coolest person that's ever existed. I'm going to dinner on a school night at 9:30 PM.
Yeah.
And we're sitting down and he got like a wine and I got like a Shirley Temple and he let me have some wine. And he was like, here's the order. You get a wedge salad. Here's the difference between the steaks. And I just remember this like beautiful, spontaneous, fancy dinner with my dad. And I was like, oh my fucking God, the coolest thing in the world that you can do is go to a restaurant and spend a bunch of money. I was like so fucking excited by it. And we already went out to eat a lot, but it was like we had our little, you know, little Mexican spot. We'd walk in and they knew our order and stuff. We were like regulars at a few different restaurants that were close to our home where my dad would be like, we're going to go do this. Like, I don't want to fucking think about cooking for you guys, even though he was a wonderful cook. And something about that. Yeah. It was just something about that night specifically that like blew my fucking mind. And I think about that night a lot.
Yeah. You've made your career in restaurants.
Un poquito. Another coma was my assault in Chicago. This is another negative one. Do you know about this?
This sounds kind of familiar.
I was kissing a girl outside of a bar and her coked up ex-boyfriend pulled up in a car. We were making out outside of a 4 a.m. bar in Chicago.
A girl you knew?
Girl I knew and I had a crush on. And I was sort of pimped into giving her my phone number. Not pimped. I was happy to do it. Wound up on a date with her, this girl that I had a crush on, and she was 2 weeks out of this relationship, and her coked up ex-boyfriend pulled up in a Lyft outside of the bar to go drink at that bar and saw us making out against the wall outside and fucking rocked my head against a brick wall mid-kiss.
Oh, my God.
And that
turns
was
out you were right to be scared of kissing back in
friggin' scared math of kissing, class. Dude. Very scared of kissing. Yeah, it was a really fucked up experience. He popped my skull open. He broke my glasses off my face so I couldn't see. And I just ran into an alley. And the most beautiful moment of it was, I was hiding behind a dumpster talking to 911 and it was snowing and I could feel snow hitting my fucking, the inside of my scalp.
Oh my God.
And my face was really cold, and then I felt warm blood start running down my eye, and I was like, oh, God, this is really bad.
Oh, my God.
Really scary. Go to the hospital, 12 staples in the head. Wake up the next morning, and basically I had the most intense PTSD. I didn't leave the house for like 5 days. The next time I did leave the house, a car backed up, and I fucking like – I was like,
oh! Oh, my God.
Shout out Thomas Kelly. He took me on a walk. He was like, let's leave the house, bud. He took me on a walk and we went and got pupusas. And we were walking down the street and this car started backing up maybe like 15 feet away from me. And I was like, ah! Oh,
man.
And I remember I was like really nervous about Thomas kind of judging me for being, you know, I was like, so as comedians, we're very self-aware. And
yeah.
I was like, oh God, I'm like acting crazy. And I remember being like, you probably think I'm insane for jumping at that car, huh, Thomas? And he was like, no, you have PTSD. It's yeah. fine. And I was like, oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what that transformation, I don't know how that really transformed me, but that was definitely like a coma for me.
Well, something to go through. I mean, you don't have any idea how it transformed you?
I think it like, you know what's actually funny? It made me hate guys with beards for a little bit. I felt like a dog. I felt like I had this animal instinct where I was like, this fucking asshole. Like I'd see someone with a beard and I'd be like, this fucking piece of shit. And I'd be like, oh, it's my brother. like totally like snap calling people's personalities based on their similarity with this dude who jumped me.
Yeah.
I do the most clockable transformation is kind of scary, but I'll talk about it. It opened up, like, I've never acted on this, but it opened up violence in my head as a like route, as like a path.
A path to what?
Like, if I was feeling frustrated in the past, I might be like, God, I gotta take a walk. God, I gotta like, or if I was like feeling road rage, I'd be like, smile and wave, or like roll your window down, take a deep breath. The road rage post assault is like, God, I'd love to pull over, pull that guy out of the fucking car and stomp on his head. Like psycho shit.
Well, pretty normal. I mean, unless I'm like just completely misdialed in, which is possible, but I don't know. People have violent fantasies.
I think I never had like violent visions. I guess violent fantasies is the term. I never had actual like stories play out in my head.
Sure.
Where it's like, I know exactly how I'd throw this guy or whatever.
Yeah, I do. I have those.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, I think it's just,
I mean, they stay in the head, you know, they're not like they coming out, but yeah.
Yeah.
And these, you know, not every coma has to have a like permanent transformation. You know, I assume you're not in the same place with guys with beards that you were before. And those effects can wear off sometimes.
Yeah. I really still don't like red beards. If you're a redhead with a beard, chop that shit off.
Thank you so much for listening. And whatever Danny said, don't even worry about it. Thank you so much.
Looks fucking nasty.
No, but great job and keep it up. Do whatever feels good to you, you know?
Dip your head in some fucking
acid. Enjoy your life. Thank you so much. And patreon.com/ this is your afterlife, you know?
Jump into a bunch of nails.
No, don't. Take those nails. Go do a saw. Go do a saw trap. Birdhouse. Don't do a saw trap. You can't even do it on yourself. That's other people do that to you.
Three comas. What's four coma?
I was going to say, I think you would need one more to get to like certify a record.
Well, my trip to Japan.
Well, Kate already talked about that one.
Fuck. Was that her coma?
That was her, I think it was her answer to the last question I have for you, which is a memory you have that feels like one of the times of your life where you were not only making the memory, but you were aware it was becoming a memory. You were aware like, oh, this is important.
This is one of my favorite things to discuss, Dave.
I'm glad we got to it at the end here.
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great time. that's the last thing you hear. This is my favorite thing to discuss.
Yeah, I got that.
That's like the funny joke I was doing.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Man. Are you familiar with the term mono no aware?
I would have pronounced it the wrong way. Mono no aware. so I've only seen it written and I think I'm like mixing it up with no wave music in my mind. So explain it as if I don't, cause I probably don't.
I think the literal Japanese translation is a gentle sadness at the transience of things.
Okay.
And, my buddy Marty and I call it pre-nostalgia. Where you're having such a fucking good time and then you all of a sudden get sad. You're sad at a party or you're on a vacation. All of a sudden you're like, no, it has to go away.
Yep.
And I feel like I have that all the fucking – it's like constant for me. We were just in New York and like the last day of the trip I was like, this fucking sucks. Why'd we come here? I'm feeling so sad. We have to leave. Or like anytime I travel – it's all the fucking time. So
your sleep anxiety sounds like that to me, dude.
Oh my God, David.
I mean, did I nail it?
Yeah.
It
feels kind of. No, I think for sure. It's like, oh no, it's got to end.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, you kind of rocked me there. I think, well, I think there's a difference between, I mean, obviously, but I for sure think it's connected. I think I used to do this thing when I was like a teenager getting drunk at a house party, and I would go into a room no one else was. And I have three distinct memories of doing this. I would go into a room where I was alone and I'd be wasted. And I would go, you're going to remember this moment for the rest of your life. You're going to remember this moment for the rest of your life. Do not forget this moment. And I remember like three different rooms at three different parties where I did that. And I was just, I just thought it was so fun that I was like at a fucking party or something. You know?
But the thing you remember is only, see, this is interesting because the question kind of begs like you to have awareness of both the experience and the making of the memory. But you're really only describing the awareness of making of the memory so much that the memory itself has almost no content to it, except this is going to be a memory. This is going to be a memory. This is going to be a memory.
That's pretty beautiful though, isn't it?
I mean, what's not beautiful? Everything's beautiful, you know?
Do you like the film director Gaspar Noé? No?
I'm trying to think if I've seen, I know the big ones, right? He did Enter the Void and mm-hmm. Irreversible. I've not seen either of those. What are the ones?
He did Climax. I really love Climax.
I think I've maybe never seen any of his stuff.
I like him. I don't love him. I think he does really cool stuff, but it's not necessarily my favorite stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a couple interviews with him where he says, and I'm not trying to say this about my life, but I feel like I've talked about drinking in high school, drinking in Austin, and the drugs at the beginning of the podcast. And I feel like this Gaspar Noé thing is kind of, I'm touching on this a little bit, but he says the best parts of his life, I think it's kind of sad actually. Well, I actually have no judgment on it. I don't know why I'm qualifying it. He says the best parts of his life are when he's under intense intoxication. And he says, the further he gets from reality, the more in love with his life he is. And it's echoed in his movies. There's a lot of substances. There's a lot of like altered states in his movies. And I don't agree with that for my own personal life, but I think it's such a cool thing for an artist to say. Like there's something like the teenager in me thinks that's so fucking badass. This guy's like, the more fucked up I get, the happier I am. Fuck it.
Right, right. In a self-destructive artist sort of way.
Yeah.
But it also feels a little bit sort of like, I don't know, I feel like there's so many things that Americans could call Buddhist and probably get wrong. But it feels, you know, Buddhist adjacent in terms of like, he feels more at peace the less of a self he feels attached to. You know what I mean? Like a detachment from ego, detachment from self.
For sure. The further, the less suffering I am witnessing, the more awake I am or something.
Right, right.
But yeah, probably Japan. No, well, I think, dude, I really do feel that feeling all the time where I'm like, this is fucking good. But it's ups and downs, you know? It's like, I think I have to feel, oh, this is cute. I was a lot more like my mom, and my brother's a lot more like my dad, okay? Mm-hmm. And my mom had a pin, a button. This is before Party Down, by the way. She had a button on her nurse's uniform at the hospital that said, are we having fun yet? And everyone knew this was like Suzanne's little button. This was like Suzanne's sort of fucking like, this was her MO. She walks in the room and it's like, well, fuck it. We got to have fun. Let's go. And I do think that's kind of my mission here. And I think that with that, like with that sort of marching order, I feel that feeling all the fucking time. And I'm lucky to. I'm not being like
with that marching order, you feel the feeling of like
life is so sweet and I'm very aware of it.
But also being sad that the fun has to end.
Oh yeah.
Well, how do you feel about the fact that this has to end?
Well, pretty good, man, because I'm gonna go play a murder mystery game.
You're literally going to a party, it sounds like.
I'm going to a party.
Okay. All right.
No, this has been great, Dave. Thanks for having me on, man.
I really appreciate you doing it. I feel like I was self-conscious in a way I'm not normally at the beginning here, because usually I don't question this is I'll question if I'm funny. I will rarely question if I have something worth saying. And that's, again, I'm not saying that that's like a-okay, great job, male host, keep it up. I'm saying that is also has problems. But when we were talking about, like, you know, the deep improv days, I was like, oh man, I was questioning the worth of what I was saying in a way that I'm no. I don't mean this to make you self-conscious, because there's an end to this thing I'm saying, which is that I feel like we really got there. I feel like we really, in a lot of ways, did kind of the perfect Harold.
Oh, motherfucker.
And but things swirled together. And I think we would not have gotten there without the groundwork laid at the top. So yeah, I appreciate you doing this.
You know what? It just makes me think of this thing that just pisses me off. You know, before Kate and I were place goers, we had a show called Haters Club.
Yeah.
And what's also just a funny side note, I've had my bedroom window open this whole time. And I have not been controlling my volume at all. And we can hear everything that happens in every apartment around us. And I wonder if people have just, like, we're pretty anonymous in our apartment building.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now people are like, damn, apartment 4, like, somebody's up there, like, his fucking mom died.
Well, if anyone's interested, go to patreon.com/thisisyourafterlife. Danny, you can hear even more of this kind of stuff from Danny and other people, you know?
Something that pisses me off. Let me end this with a little Haters Club note.
Yes.
Fucking sometimes I meet people. We were talking earlier about being in LA, blah, 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 in the biz.
Yeah.
Sometimes you meet people in the artist world, in the comedy world, wherever, and they jump to, oh my God, we're such good friends. Oh my God, you're friends with this person. We're so, oh my God, ah. There's like this like excited hyper level of like familiarity that they jump to try and shortcut being strangers.
Yeah.
You and I are far from strangers, but we're longtime friends who haven't caught up in a while. And I think there's a similar thing there where you have got, I believe 100% in small talk and the power of getting the fuck over not knowing someone or not knowing something. And, oh, it just bothers me, man, when somebody's jumping the gun. Like, if you had started off and been like, all right, so first question. No, fuck that shit, bro.
That is so funny, because I literally have been thinking it could be better for the show for me to start as quickly as possible with the first question and then weave the small talk and the interest in the person's work into the rest of the show. So I think
the small talk and what I'm calling small talk is literally you and me reminiscing about insanely funny memories. So
not
that small, but I think that stuff is so important to get a vibe for someone.
Yeah. You're right. You're kind of hitting me with the, mano no aware own. Podcast. It's yours was I did you with sleep anxiety. You did me with whether or not I should structure the podcast.
And but bro, fuck one all more that. Thing.
What's that?
One I know you're thing. Trying to sign off because
I'm trying to sign off because you gave me an out.
I know.
Okay.
Well, one more thing.
Yeah.
I think it's very important as someone with a product, a creative product online, that you don't ever stop experimenting. And I don't think you're someone that would, but I am feeling this thing with place goers. I'm like, every time I get into a little rut with an editing style or something, I'm like, crack it back open. Like, don't let yourself fucking, I want to throw spaghetti forever.
Yeah, totally. So what creative products would you like to tell people about before we go?
Check out Place Goers on YouTube. It's an amazing exploration travel vlog that features the most perfect couple that's ever existed. And while you're online, go check out Instagram.com. There's a lot of funny reels on there.
Okay. Anything? Do you want people to follow you on any of those things? Or you want?
Yes, please, man. Follow Place Goers on YouTube. I'm on Instagram at Strong Danny Catlow. Please follow me. I need to get my numbers up soon, or this is all going to be for nothing. Yeah. And actually, the call to action is this: go to a Place Goers video, watch it, and give me some fucking feedback, because I need someone to fucking pick something apart on that channel.
I will start texting you more specific feedback, but it's not going to be negative. It's probably going to be in the form of like, I really liked this, but I'll be really specific about it.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, love that.
But speaking of which, if you're listening to this show and you want to give feedback, because this is the thing we want, we're just begging for, when people say, you know, subscribe, yes, please. Rate the show, write a review. Really, I would just like to hear what you think. I check those reviews periodically, even though people haven't left one in a while, because I just want to know what people think. Doing this stuff online, that's the big downside, is you're not live in a room. So if you want to emulate the experience of being live in a room, email thisisyourafterlifepodcast@gmail.com. Go to patreon.com/thisisyourafterlife. You get all those TIYA After Dark episodes, which I'm trying to think.
It's TIYA After Dark, or is it TIY After Dark?
No, TIYA. This is your afterlife after dark.
It should be This Is Your After Dark.
No, because it's not. What? That doesn't.
The show is your afterlife. Is the show? This is your After Dark.
You're really talking a lot for a guy who told me that your out was 4 minutes ago.
This is your After Dark. This is your After Dark. That's good.
So go there. Just go to thisisyourafterlife.com for all the info. Thank you all so much. Ira Glass,
please, man, help Dave grow his listenership.
Thank you, Danny, for doing the show.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you to Matt Sage for the show's art. This is your afterlife house band, Lake Mary, for the music. And until next time, remember, you are a mist. Wait. Oh, no, I did that. Oh, I did it wrong. Here's the real end.
Do it again.